I'm Jimmy McDonald. Our guest is Mr. Bayard Rustin, Executive Director of the A. Philip Randolph Institute. And on our panel is Mr. Dan Watts, Editor-in-Chief of Liberator Magazine. Welcome, Mr. Watts. Ms. Sharon Sutton and Mr. Dennis Kirkland of the Philadelphia Inquirer. I think we'll take our first question from you, Mr. Watts.
Mr. Rustin, I'd like to pose a question based on what I perceive to be a kind of a general feeling that runs through much of the black community around the country, particularly in the urban north, a feeling that the millions of black people who have been locked into this poverty cycle of no money is all part of some grand plan of genocide being perpetrated by that group, that amorphous mass of faceless people called the white power structure. And if this feeling is true, let's assume that it is true, this feeling of genocide and, you know, being locked into this endless cycle of poverty, in many of the areas, the unemployment rate is running as high as 50% today as opposed to the national average of 6.2. And in view of the fact that the black community did not fight on the side of the Nazis in the last war, how can you still cling to the notion of some kind of freedom budget or Marshall Plan for the black community, since one of the prerequisites for being a recipient for a Marshall Plan was that you had to have fought against the United States?
Well, I do not know whether the power structure is engaging in purposeful genocide. For one thing, I'm not sufficiently on the inside of what the power structure does to know. I do think that for the masses of blacks who are getting poorer and poorer as time goes on, who are more and more facing unemployment, for these people, what is happening is a kind of spiritual genocide, whether people want it to be that or not. Now, Mr. Watts is quite right that unemployment amongst Negro teenagers is over 50%.
Mr. Rustin, I said black. I'm sorry, Jimmy, but black.
Well, you use the terms you want to describe people, and I use the terms I want.
All right, Mr. McDonald will probably be the moderator.
I think we ought to set some ground rules here. I think you have a perfect right to pose your question, but he has also the same right to refer to
I want quibbles. All right.
Let me just point out, Mr. Watts, that since black people came here, there has been a big debate over what they want to be called. It will go on forever. Now, to get back to the question, I am only saying that I cannot deal with what I think people are thinking. I can deal with trying to answer the question of how do black people get houses, decent education, jobs, and medical care. My argument is that they cannot get those things as blacks. They can only get them because America is prepared to provide jobs for whoever needs them, medical care for whoever needs them, and homes. Because the reality is that if most blacks between 18 and 25 today, who are unemployed, were made white tomorrow, they would still not get jobs. The problem there is not black or white. It is Mr. Nixon's economic policies which say you deal with inflation through unemployment.
Yeah, but Mr. Rustin, I might point out to you that this 50% unemployment level seems to run through the black community as opposed to even the... If one could exclude the Appalachia regions in terms of poor whites, that the national average of 6.2 as opposed to almost as high as 50%, that 50% seems to fall on the shoulders of the black youth of America. So I'm just wondering whether one can't entertain the notion that it is a racial thing in terms of the fact that blacks are suffering.
Well, I maintain, of course, that, of course, whenever a black person doesn't have something, it's undoubtedly related in some way to race. But then we have to have perspective. There are four times as many teenagers in the United States who are white, who are unemployed, than black. We are proportionally higher unemployed. But the fact of the matter is, poor people today, whether they're black or white, are getting less and less an opportunity to move upward. And we do not solve the problem for the blacks who want to move up as blacks. We have to solve that problem within the framework of social engineering for all who are poor.
Mr. Rustin, I noticed in what, you know, your answers, you seem to be saying that America will not solve the problems for blacks. It can only solve the problems for poor people if blacks are included. Now, since blacks had an entirely different experience, that is, of slavery and unpaid labor, than the whites who came over, are you saying that, in fact, that America is so racist that only if we try to sneak blacks in under a different kind of name can we ever get any equality or justice in this country?
I am not saying it in quite those terms, but we may mean the same thing. I am saying that this society is not going to do anything special for black people, and we had better face it. This society will sooner or later be forced to do something about poor. And I would say it another way, too. If I were white and poor, I would not tolerate the nation doing something for other poor people without including me, or vice versa. That's the political reality.
Reality of that poor white, that he has the opportunity to get his spiritual hang-ups relieved by joining the White Citizens Council and running into Niggertown at night, you know, and taking off a few brothers. So this is why, Byatt, I really have to...
Question, please. Go ahead.
Well, the point here, again, is that I'm not disputing, you know, your overall position in terms of poor. What I'm trying to point out that is even the poorest white, he always has that option of mobility in terms of moving horizontally, if not vertically, up this economic ladder.
Well, I don't think that's true. I think that poor whites very often have no more option of getting up than poor blacks. What they do have, however, is a false sense that whiteness in itself is some kind of virtue. And that is the reason it was possible for poor whites in the South to believe that they were really in a part of the white middle class. And that's one of the things we've got to get rid of.
Negroes have that same hang-up, too. I mean, the lower-income Negroes.
Mr. Kirkland.
I'd like to pose a two-pronged question to you, Mr. Rand. Mr. Burns. In 1966, you introduced the so-called freedom budget, and at that time you called for an expenditure of $18.5 billion to alleviate poverty and help unemployment and rebuild the cities. Now, my question is, do you still think that this amount is adequate for 1971? And the second part of my question is, I posed it this way, in an annual report of the A. Philip Randolph Institute in 1970, it was stated that Negroes, by themselves, don't possess sufficient political power to effect reforms or change. Now, my question on this question is what is the A. Philip Randolph Institute doing in order to perpetuate and help various black men and various candidates that have around the country who have become aware and are seeking political
power?
Yes. Your first question is no. 18.5 will no longer do what we proposed to do then. It would be somewhere around 26.7 today, $1 billion over what we are now spending. Now, in answer to what the A. Philip Randolph Institute is doing about the political situation, we have 50 groups in 22 states, including the most important cities in the country, where we are spending about $750,000 a year urging black brothers and sisters to get out and vote, getting them registered. Number two, we have helped all of the black candidates who have run for political office in the last 5 years. If they were running for something that was national in structure or which had national importance connected with it. Well, and the reason for this is that we believe, I believe, that there is only one way, finally, to get black brothers and sisters out to vote. And that is when they see black candidates running in whom they believe.
Well, I would have to disagree with that, what you said about only supporting people who are running for national office. Just
Oh, that's recently, purely a financial question.
Well, financially, but recently we've had a mayoralty election where we had a black candidate. And I'm not saying the old adage how Maine votes, so goes the country, and so on and so forth, but Philadelphia is a pivotal point in the state of Pennsylvania.
You misunderstood me. I said where they are running for national office or where that local election has national significance. Now, I think the Philadelphia election did have national significance because here was a test in this nation. Are we going to have law and order candidates, by which we mean Billy Cubs, running the cities? Or are we going to have law and order candidates running who know that the only way to establish law is by establishing justice?
In other words, you're saying that the Institute did support one of the candidates in the recent merger.
Yes.
Thank you.
Are you saying that it supported them financially?
In a number of ways.
Okay, and there was another question. You mentioned the Freedom Budget. I don't remember who asked the question, Mr. Kirkland. And he asked you something about whether the figure that was quoted at in 1966, I think, is when the Freedom Budget
That's
was
right.
first proposed.
Yeah.
There has been no monies really coming forth from the federal government towards that Freedom Budget, has there?
Let me say that the Nixon administration is tantamount to a national disaster like fire and flood. Mr. Nixon has cut everything which would do anything to help the black community. Instead of putting any money in, the President of the United States is now sitting on $12.5 billion, which Congress appropriated, which would help blacks and the cities, and he will not spend it.
Can I just interrupt a moment, Mr. Rustin? May I ask a question? The famous black congressional caucus... it seems to me one of the problems here, if we could accept the fact that President Nixon has been described as a political animal of a sort, that if these black congressmen were indeed representing black constituencies rather than playing stalking horse for the various Democratic presidential hopefuls, that perhaps if they had approached President Nixon on the level that, look, I represent X amount of black people and I can help deliver to you in 72, black votes, pivotal votes in some of these key areas, perhaps as politicians they would have been helping the black community more than running down there screaming about their Democrats and then black congressmen second.
Well, I think that they would, if they did that, they would prove that they were very stupid politicians, because you could not, Mr. Nixon knows jolly well that his record has been so bad in regard to the black community, the blacks simply will not vote for him in 72.
But the black community has been told us, Mr. Rustin, by this, you know, this old liberal labor intellectual FDR coalition, which have sold out the black people. Remember, black people were sold out by White House long before President Nixon got there. I'm sorry,
you must ask questions and not make statements.
I am not making a statement. I'm merely trying to give a broad canvas for Mr. Rustin.
Ms. Sutton, please.
Yeah. Okay, I want to ask another kind of question, I guess, which is on the same lines. One of the points about black organizations in the past and in the present is that they have been largely funded by white organizations or philanthropic white people who have a tendency to only fund that which goes along with their needs, and that blacks have not, in fact, contributed a sizable amount of their own money to fund their own black institutions. I want to know what's the position of your institute on that, and are you seeking ways to get black funding so you can be more independent?
Let me say, to begin with, anytime people give away money, they give it away in their own interest. I'm not so dumb as not to know that. Mm-hmm. However, one must also know that sometimes the interests of white people coincide with the interests of black people. And I believe that most of the money that's been given to black people in recent years has been where the interests of whites and blacks coincide. The Supreme Court said, and quite rightly so, that segregated buses and trains were a burden on interstate travel. That means that the boys on Wall Street were losing money. Therefore, people gave money to Martin Luther King to help get rid of it. There was a mutual interest. Now, most of the money that I get from white people, it comes from white people who are interested in the same things I am. For an example, I get money from the American labor movement. Why do they give me money? Now, they give me money because the more blacks who are organized into trade unions, the stronger they become, because blacks are not on the outside to be used as strikebreakers. Why do I go to them? Because since blacks are workers, and since blacks in unions make 50% more money than those who are not in unions, it's in my interest. So money is always given on a basis of mutual interest or a takeover.
Would you say that would be true, Mr. Rustin, for your intervention in crossing the vast waters of the Hudson River to head over to that smog-bound town of Newark, New Jersey, to engage in the Newark teachers' strike, in which the black, some of the black teachers were opposed to? Do you feel that you were acting on behalf of the black teachers in that instance? I'm merely...
Since those who are in organized labor make twice as much if they are black than those who are not, obviously I went over to Newark to help the teachers get that additional money. The problem was you had a black mayor who did not want to increase their salaries. And I'm not interested in black mayors who are anti-labor any more than I'm interested in crackers who are anti-labor.
There are also northern white politicians who are anti-labor.
Oh, of course there are.
I noticed that you just happened to pick on the southerners. But anyway...
I'd like to ask a question.
Don't make a conspiracy out of that.
About a recent book that was recently published, book by Lenora Burson, called The Negroes and the Jews. And in the book, it described the role that the Jews have played throughout history as to the black struggle financially, politically, and in the labor movement. And I was wondering, I'm questioning an ad in the New York Times dated June of 1970, which states the black Americans should support Israel. Is this ad part of the payment for the for their support?
I am for democracy wherever it exists, regardless of whether people are Jewish, Italian, Poles, or whatnot. I am against undemocratic methods wherever they exist, and I will fight undemocratic methods in Africa and work for, as I did, black politicians who are democratic in Africa. I happen to have worked in four African revolutions. Now, since the Middle East is a backward area, I am interested in Israel not because they are Jews, but because I want to see an example of democracy flourishing in the Middle East. And if there were an Arab country there, surrounded by Jews who were totalitarians, then I would be working to help the Arabs. My point always is that I'm more interested in principles than I am in religion and color, because you cannot build anything solid politically on the basis of color or religion. The only way you operate politically is where you have a common objective and pursue it with a common method.
Okay, I have another question, which is, you have said in a 1969 Ebony article, you called black unity a myth, and you know, you said that blacks have too many class distinctions. And I wanted to know, do you feel that anything can supersede class distinctions? For example, the question of Africa to blacks, as the question of Israel has superseded class distinctions among just about all American Jews.
That is, of course, not true. And I'll give you an illustration. At the time of Hitler, when you would have thought that Jews would have had the greatest unity, you got the biggest fight amongst Jews.
They're not organized
Are you a Zionist or are you not? Amongst the Irish in this country, one of the most brutal social struggles that went on was between those Irish who were well off, known as lace curtain Irish, and the poor Irish.
I'm coming to this.
Blacks will not, first of all, there is no Africa. You have to talk about which country in Africa you're talking about. There is no Africa as such that you can support. I happen to be very much against several African governments that are black.
With Mr. Rustin.
I am against Guinea, for an example, because of the totalitarian methods being used by Sékou Touré.
I'm not going to defend
Sékou Touré when he uses totalitarian methods merely because he's black.
As opposed to the Republic of the Congo, let's say?
That's perfectly all right. I said I was opposed to several. I am very much for what is happening in many. But the idea that this unity thing has got to be thought about. And I want to give you an illustration, as I did in Ebony. You can talk about unity of education, but when they sit down to talk about anything concrete, Elijah Muhammad says, send the children to my Muslim schools. Roy Wilkins says, I want integrated schools. Innes says, I want all black school boards. And there's no unity as to how to educate a black child.
You don't think blacks could organize and get more funding, say, to some African countries, which are generally acceptable to most? Right now, Africa gets proportionately much less as a continent than Israel gets.
I am the vice chairman of a committee which is working to get economic aid for Africa.
Have you been organizing massive numbers of blacks to do
that? No, because that is not the way it gets done. You cannot organize masses of blacks to get help for Africa. You get blacks to register and vote and put political pressure.
Isn't that still
mobilizing?
But
didn't you say earlier, Mr. Rustin, that someone quoted you that said that there's a thing there that
right.
Mr. Kirkland
Negroes
had.
Negroes don't by themselves possess sufficient political power to effect reforms.
Now, what you're saying then I think I'm hearing something else.
How do 3%?
I mean, how do you say now go and vote and, you know, effect a change when you say
that
they
don't? Because you haven't heard the sentence. It says Negroes alone do not possess that power.
Well, the Jewish community in America constitutes less than 3% of the population, and yet, certainly out of proportion to their numbers, they have been able to exercise a tremendous amount of power, economic power primarily.
But not alone.
But they did it as a unit, though, by it.
No, they have not. There is not Jewish unity on this question.
Oh,
and I want to say furthermore, I am saying that Jews alone are not doing it. For one thing, one of the chief reasons we're doing it is because we want to keep the Russians from getting a foothold in the Middle East.
Who's the we you're talking about, by the way?
The Mark? United States.
Oh, I see. Okay. I mean, I get confused.
Yeah, it's a good question. Now, next.
I have a question.
Now, I want to explain this, if I may, because it's very important.
Okay.
My argument is that since black people alone cannot do it, we have to make alliances with other people who want some of the same things we want.
There's no disagreement
and
there.
And approach them politically.
But by it, the point is that the Jewish community has been organized around the whole question of the maintenance of the state of Israel. Now, there's nothing wrong with that. What I'm trying to say is, why isn't it true for black people? Why can't black people as a group unify one around some common issues?
Because you cannot unify around 53 different things which are dissimilar.
Well, let me pose a question to you. In the same vein as to financial and political power exercised by black people, do you think now, in that statement that you made about not having sufficient political power, do you think the blacks have sufficient financial power in order to, say, bring about a change in South Africa, the apartheid theory?
No, absolutely not.
Well, if they would stop, in one aspect, if the blacks would abstain from buying a new car, say, for 2 years, right, it would affect enough change to have General Motors pull out of South Africa, which would affect South Africa's financial status, so on and so forth.
You'll pardon my laughing, but, brother, if you want to base a political proposition on a brother giving up his car, you don't know the brother.
I know that. I'm saying, I'm using a hypothetical case.
Friends, I really want you to understand me. When Africa is divided into 53 totally different states where they did not have unity in Addis Ababa last week on 5 different questions, how can we have unity for them?
But haven't we all heard on these panels, though, We've heard a number of our so-called, quote, leaders, end quote, say that there should be a diversity of views on almost every question, and we sit around the table and work them out. I think there is some unity in the black community about, you know, where we want to go as a people. Now, there are many routes to that, but that's a statement. The question that I want to get back to, and I'd be remiss if I let it go without commenting on, and that's the Ocean Hill, Brownsville issue. We've received many letters, and they would like to know why you felt it necessary to support that struggle.
I think that many black people were totally misled. They attempted...
Incidentally, that's what they think about
you. Yeah, of course. And I'm perfectly willing to admit that. Of course they do. And they have every right to. I saw it as a struggle for teachers to maintain their unit of the UFT, which, incidentally, has made tremendous contributions to black people. Other people were involved, saw the Ocean Hill Brownsville as a black-white struggle. I believe it became a black-white struggle. But I am not going
to... Wait a minute. Now, you know and I know that this was not done as a result of the
black community.
I can
tell you what happened if you don't know. The teacher's contract says that no teacher can be transferred or fired without due process. The guy who was over there, Rhody McCoy, transferred teachers without due process.
That's not quite accurate, Mr.
Well,
because
this
according
is my
to the
story.
Original agreement, there was agreed that these teachers would be transferred. But old Shanker was having problems with the elections coming up, and he thought this would be an excellent opportunity to use it to rally the troops in the UFT. There was general agreement.
If you're not going to permit me to answer the question,
well,
I think we should
Mr. McDonald, but you're certainly perfectly free, Mr.
Well, wait a minute. Let him answer.
Well, I'm telling him that he has the freedom to answer.
You ask me what I thought, what I saw. Now, therefore, the transference, whenever black people permit due process to go down the drain, I can tell you we're the ones who are going to get it. I will fight anybody, black or white, who tries to eliminate due process. Rhody McCoy first.
Okay, and I want to thank you. This has been quite a lively session. Thank you, Mr. Rustin, for being with us.